Hi, I'm Ira, and I'm going to talk about one of our more persistent problems, which is persistent handles. This is something that we as a team, I think, have not really addressed as much as we should, given its importance in the ecosystem. Brief note on who I am. I'm a Xamarin team member, mainly been focused on doing work with SMB2 and SMB3, but I'll go anywhere I have to. I'm also the technical lead for the Red Hat storage team for SMB, mainly focused on integration, Samba integration with Linux technologies like Lustre, Ceph, XFS, Rich Ackles, you name it. I'm probably going to be interested in it if it integrates with Linux. And to some degree, how that all integrates with Windows. So let's start with a simple question. What's a persistent handle? Okay, basically, it's a durable handle with some extra guarantees attached to it. If I understand. Yeah? It's not. Okay. That better, Michael? Thank you. Okay, it's basically a durable handle with extra guarantees. It tells you how long it's valid for, where it might be valid. Even though I know protocol-wise, I don't believe there's an intricate connection, there's a direct connection to the witness protocol, I always see them as connected. Talking about it without witness almost seems a little silly. Witness will tell the clients where they can reconnect, when failures occur. Some might say that witness can replace TickleX. I see them as more complementary technologies at this time, but that's my thinking. And really, what the reason to do persistent handles is continuous availability. There's just no question about that. Okay, it allows reconnection of and restoration of client state after a disconnect. Due to failure, due to choice, whatever, it allows you to reconnect your state, okay? And in my mind, it's part of what you need to get the full range of SMB3 features. You can have the channels, but if you don't have the reliability, but if you have the reliability and not the channels, you end up with the same problem. It's the whole package comes together to form a server an enterprise-grade set of technologies that's useful to our users. Okay, applications that require CA, in my mind, the two bullet point ones I think are Hyper-V and MS SQL, last I knew. But anything can benefit from it that runs a long time. Back when I was at MathWorks, we used to have 24-hour build cycles, and if we had SMB3, if there was a network outage or something, or you know, a server went down and came up, we might have been able to survive. Okay, not lost, 20 hours of work because something went down. That's big. But it's not a standard workload you'd think of. It's more of a consumer workload type situation. A lot of applications are going to be able to benefit from this higher availability that aren't going to be obvious up front. Okay, they aren't going to be the ones we write down on the paper. Day one, step one. Okay, as I look at it, I say, I start to take a look at the back ends that we're actually going to put this data on. Because I'm an old systems programmer, systems engineering type. And I see two major designs coming forward in the Linux universe, and actually in the universe in general. I see the more software-defined storage type systems, I'll call them clustered file systems, shared nothing systems. I'll put Lustre, Ceph, GPFS. These are examples of systems that can do this type of behavior. Okay. In some ways, even though it has a shared backend, GFS2 can act in a similar way. It has multiple heads. It projects itself through multiple machines. So it really at all, you know, at any time you can connect here, you connect here, you see the same data. Okay, and then there's really shared storage, but not clustered. Okay, through SAS backends and fiber channel, you do an active passive failover, more like the old NetApp ONTAP 7 stuff. Okay, yo, it's great. Nothing wrong with it. Works. Okay, it's there's a reason why it was used for so long. But today, the primary focus we have is on cluster technology. I'm going to do a brief scan through shared because I'm not, you know, I believe in that it's a good technology, but we'll go there briefly. So let's head over to it. Well, actually, I'm sorry, it's live. Oh, so I'll actually go forward and back. So on shared storage right now, there's really no major work being done here. I think it's probably low complexity and low risk to get shared handles on, to get persistent handles on shared storage once we get the data straight. And I think the performance implications could be pretty sharp and good. These type of systems do not have to deal with the consistency and cache coherency and all the other things that the systems like Ceph and Gluster have to deal with. And that makes them a lot simpler to deal with and reason through, and they're also based on tried and true technologies we know today. Okay. To jump back, the thing we're going to need to do in order to actually save the data I mentioned in the previous slide is we're going to need to save it in force handle state. Okay, so when those disconnects happen and when those problems occur, we have to deal with it. Okay, and that means we have to basically hold state. In cases where currently today we drop state in Samba, we just would go, SMBD died. Well, we don't need his byte range locks anymore. Chuck them. Leases and op locks are invalid. Chuck them. Share modes? No, no need. He's not coming back. Chuck him. Okay? Because it's a best effort. Okay? This is a problem. Because in reality, we have to do better than that if we want to do persistent handles. Because all these things are going to be part... We even have to go all the way down to saving the handle ID mappings to file name. We're going to have to decide how to hook the GUIDs up. And how to get all of this down to somewhere useful. And then there's also the question of where do we put it? In CTDB, file system, on the file system, which is actually what drove the next slide. On the file system here, if we put the TDBs on the file system that's being failed over, we get some pretty good characteristics. Could work, but it's not where we're going. We're going much more into the CTDB and the file system world in my mind. At least right now, okay? Personally, I think CTDB is at slight odds with persistent handles by design. And in fact, by its own papers, it says it is. There's nothing wrong with this, it's the design, okay? CTDB is designed to have a weak consistency, in a sense, because if a node goes down that's holding the record, that's the master for the record, and it's the one that was sitting there pounding on the record and dealing with it, and it goes away, well, likely the state associated with it just went too. That's not necessarily the end of the world. But that type of consistency won't work for what we're doing. Okay, we need to present stronger consistency. In my mind, system integrating things like Raft, where we have better durability guarantees and we're more organized about the guarantees we provide, which I'll cover as we go forward, okay, will help. And we need to start asking what type of failures will survive a CTDB clustered environment. Saying we'll survive everything going to heck is probably not the right answer, as I'll begin to cover, because really, you're probably not going to need to survive that. Okay, in the file system is the current choice that we're making with Gluster. Okay, And persistent handle recovery is assisted by the file system in this case. But it requires support from the file system. It isn't portable to other file systems, which isn't good. But I think that the basic technologies created and the abstractions created will be portable to other file systems. So the people who follow in our tracks will find that there are tracks to follow in, and they won't even be that bad. And this is actually the key question. Why go down there? Why not do it in CTDB? And our answer really was interoperability. We present a lot of different services off the same data. Samba doesn't have an NFS server, an iSCSI server, an FTP server, a Fuse server, or one of about probably, I think they're talking Glance and Cinder and all different types of strange stuff coming out of here. Right now, Samba doesn't do all of that. So we can't just say, Samba's going to solve it. It's a little big for Samba to solve. Not impossible, but it's big. And I'd say regardless of what we think, the world is more than SMB, at least the world I live in today. Okay, I realize this is an SMB conference, but when I deal with things, I still have to deal with the cursive three letters NFS and things like that. It's part of what I do. So that was part of why we did it. And really, where does it go? And how do you do it? It depends on the design of your system, to be honest. For this, we'll obviously discuss cluster, because that's the system I'm working with. But I think you're going to face similar problems in any system, okay? Design of the solutions clearly vary based upon system, but I think Gluster's architecture will help motivate why it's a good example system to start with and why it's a good system to learn from initially. So we're going to start to dive into a little bit of Gluster here. Gluster basics. Gluster underneath is pretty clean, okay? If you envision Gluster as a giant stacked VFS, you have it right, okay? It's literally what it is. Everything is just a stack in the VFS, okay? Every network communication layer, replication, locking, caching, you name it. It's pretty much going to show up as a layer. Okay, and on the next few slides, I am going to take questions at this point because I'm going to start diving in. I'm going to want to make sure people do follow. So this, and I said, this is a stacked VFS, but in fact, this is kind of the world Gluster. This is, in a Gluster deployment, what we see. Okay, this is what we're thinking of our architecture as today. Depicting one client connecting through the system. Okay, so Windows 8 client fires up, he hits the front end, he starts a Samba process up, that fires back into Gluster. They'll then be writing to backend file systems. The literal split you see is correct here. We'll just split and we'll be running three TCP connections, in this case the three machines in all likelihood, to three different XFSs. That's pretty normal. That's a normal thing for us. If we were doing erasure coding, it could be even more. But I'm just going to show more simple examples just because they're a little smaller. So we're going to now move down into the stack itself. Okay, and here we're going to elide the client the Samba client, the Windows client, and talk about what happens underneath the covers on the server side a bit. So Samba's going to talk to its VFS module. And we have an API that wraps Gluster and makes it consumable to anybody who can talk POSIX. Okay? But then basically you start to come into a bunch of translators. So each one of these blocks is representing a translator from here on out, pretty much. Okay? So here, for various reasons, we have a deduplication and up, not standard deduplication. It actually deduplicates a specific problem, a specific type of request that will become obvious in a few seconds. But this actually handles the deduplication of requests within the system that come through this whole thing. It basically deduplicates requests coming back up the stack, or quote-unquote stack. For those, anybody here heard of consistent hashing, distributed hashing? This is basically a distributed hash table that goes to a replication module, to two different replication modules. So the hash table, your consistent hashing, splits out to two replication modules that then literally will split out to two different IP or RDMA connections for you that then will go off to your server side. And this is totally normal in Gluster. In fact, actually, there's more stuff that I'm not showing. And I may not, the stack of DHT to AFR is correct, but, and the stack of upcall is correct, but there's probably another two, three, four things I'm not showing you correctly in here that have just dropped. But this allows us to have and add features and decide where features reside a lot more easily and actually have true software-defined storage. Do I have any questions on this layer at this stage? People getting where it's going? Because the next slide's going to get a little deeper. This one's the one where we begin to get a little nasty. So each one of those little, where I say it was outgoing, well, literally when I say client and server, those are names of translators. So this is the endpoint that you'll come into what we call a Gluster brick, okay? And in the brick, or server, a lot of people might call it, but it's, we call them bricks, okay? So in the brick, you'll see that there's a server translator that then will pass your request down to the upcall translator, for it could be the upcall translator. This part of the stack is a little more fuzzy because some of this is being designed. Okay, so down to upcall, which is used by NFS to do, right now we're doing some cache validation and validation at this layer. Lease locking, which is where we're going to be doing leasing and delegation. Share mode enforcement, mandatory lock enforcement, which may be down actually integrated into POSIX locking. So these two may be the same block or a different block, but conceptually, you can see as you keep coming down the stack, then it would hit our change log. So this is where we would record, for instance, if we're going out to, we're doing georep, georeplication, anything like that. We come out through change log, we'd record any performance data we want to record. And actually, we have a translator called POSIX, which seems kind of odd. This is actually where the bits hit the disk, where we actually issue a POSIX call, and it writes it. We actually have that segmented out. It's not just implicit on the end, which will then dispatch into the kernel and down into XFS itself. So can you see how the stack works in a basic way based on this material? Okay, this is the basic way Gluster works. And this is what we're hooking into. So there's some design decisions here to make. As we go forward, we're creating some new translators for SMB3 and multi-protocol support. The deduplication logic, okay, comes from the fact that if you look here, each one of these least lock translators will send a request back saying what happened. So they're going to say my lease broke. And they're all going to agree, but I need a way to deduplicate that so that I don't get five of them at the client layer, because the client's not going to have any idea what to do with five of them, and it should be abstracted from the client. And that's what the deduplication layer does for us. Allows us to stop up, it allows us not to have the client get confused. Okay. Lease lock, share modes, mandatory locking, okay? Because we really need to discuss stacking locks and whatnot the way SMB does it. We can't just, you know, say, ah, it's POSIX locking, yeah. Nope, I get it right. Least lock created some interesting things though, okay? Because we have to be able to basically have a file system, have a network file system come back to us and say, hey, that changed. And within Gluster, this was very unique. Nobody had actually solved this problem. I realized in other systems it had been solved. Least lock basically is what establishes the ability for us to break, to handle write least breaks, read least breaks, and whatnot, and actually enforce it properly. Okay? So things like this is what allows us to have fuse clients running around on NFS on a mount that could have SMB traffic. Because we can actually block the write or the read and say, nope, sorry. Or even the open potentially. Sorry, block. Allow the SMB client to flush its state down and then unblock that unblock the actual op that's coming through in the file system. So we can do all of that now. We have those capabilities. Okay. As far as I know, it's a little unusual. But this is how you have to do it in order to make sure that you actually get it right. Okay. And this is part of what drove us down and away from CTDB and down into the file system. Okay. This is, once again, the multi-pro. Go. Yeah. I'll amend that. It's not as unusual. There's at least two or three file systems I've seen with it. Okay. Yeah. Okay. I was not aware. I'll amend my slide. That was one that, but the biggest thing is this allows us to enforce leases properly. Share mode's much the same, okay? This, regardless of where you're coming in, having the file system do the enforcement is what matters. Okay? And that's really going to be the big thing all the way through. Okay? Because really, if it isn't enforced by the file system, somebody's going to go around it in our case. Thank you. And mandatory locking has much the same set of concerns. Okay? Stacking locks. And we're going to try and enforce it all. But most importantly, what are the problems we actually get back? And what problems do we have in the actual design and discussion of this stuff? One of the things we've always had, at least in our system, is discussing who the client is. Because I know in our system, we have two notions of client. We have the file system to... We have Samba to the file system, and we have Samba's version of client. These have to be decoded, but in fact, the file system actually needs to know about the SMB client. It needs knowledge of that data in order to do recovery properly and enforcement properly. Okay, and we need to be able to time out data such that we can actually give a CA scenario where our client doesn't come back. Because, you know, we can't just hold the data forever. And we can't trash the data, so you end up having to enforce timeouts. And those are going to have to be enforceable per client, on a per top-level client, and a per SMBD or a per SMB client basis. Now, for us, that's probably less of an issue. When you begin to talk about NFS Ganesha, where you have the system actually presenting multiple clients on a single connect, a single backend connection, this begins to matter quite a bit. And some of the interesting things we've discovered as we did this. SMB3 persistent handles and Grace share a lot in common in a weird way, because they both have to deal with timeout and recovery. And things like they share share modes, they have delegations. And so by designing it in the file system, we end up truly multi-protocol and compliant with SMB3 from day one. So by putting the support down here, we end up satisfying both sets of requirements in a nice, smooth way. And I'll say, you know, the big thing is some of the details are going to be a little inaccurate here. Okay, I'll guarantee that. And we're working on the VFS changes that are going to be needed for Samba to support some of these concepts. But the overall plan is accurate, and the architecture you learned today is accurate for Gluster. Okay, and I encourage you to go dig into Gluster to get an understanding of where some of this stuff is going, as far as where we may be going with parts of Samba. Because the parts are going to start coming from Gluster initially in this area, interestingly. They're not going to start in Samba, because we need the support from Gluster initially to even start talking in Samba. So this is one of those, this is an unusual situation in that regard. Do I have any questions?
Do you have some work in progress branch or something like that, so that we can see the API you propose for the VFS changes?
The API is not, we're not there yet, Matt. Okay. To be honest with you, some of the Gluster side stuff is still coming in, and we have to see what some of the Gluster APIs are going to end up looking like and what some of the final stuff is beginning to look like before we begin to settle out a little. One of the difficult things to deal with, actually, is that Gluster is a fully threaded system, and I don't want the API to end up being threaded, almost certainly, because that's not the Samba way. So there's going to be some mismatching there, just that I know about initially. But there's definitely, it's a valid question of how are we going to get the callbacks into the system.
Okay, I'm more interested in seeing which data you pass down and how you reconnect a handle or something like that.
Yeah, the extensions to open and whatnot are going to be interesting. Open, create are going to be very interesting. Yes, I agree. Okay.
Thanks.
Others?
Maybe just one brief comment.
Sure.
You say that we'll have complete multi-prol protocol from day one. Maybe it is worth mentioning that currently you can use Gluster with both SMB and NFS, but not at the same time.
Yes.
So, and there will be a time maybe when this multi-protocol support is not there, but...
Yeah, this is putting the underpinnings in place to allow for it. It's, you know, you have to, it's, you know, there's a, and there's more for multi-protocol support than just this. A lot
exactly.
More.
Thanks. You mentioned you have chosen not to use CTDB because of its weak guarantees, which are by design for, or which are okay for connections which you don't want to reopen. Have you considered to extend CTDB to actually take care of that by replicating records in the CTDB cluster or something like that?
Yeah, it was thought about. But when you begin to think about the other things that have to be solved within the Gluster system, you begin to think about, well, there's NFS and there's other pieces within that system. Okay, from a system point of view, it made sense to drive it down. From a strictly Samba point of view, yes, it can be solved. And there's no doubt that it should be solved. But for this system, given its set of things, it made sense to actually drive it down into the file system in my mind. A different system, I could come up with a very different answer.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, one more comment regarding that. I've also thought about these things, and there's definitely the plan to enhance CDDB. So when and Ara said that CDDB is meant to be like weak in consistency, it's of course in other places extremely strong in consistency when we look at persistent databases, but these are much too strong because the whole database is locked when you do an operation. And so of course there can be an intermediate model. There are plans and thoughts for that. We could even try and prototype it in CDDB. And then one remark that also fits nicely with my what I mentioned in the earlier talk, if we have that the possibility of passing connections between SMBDs, we can also do the durable handles better than before, because we can keep the file open really. The weakness with our durable handles now is that we close it when the client disconnects. Now we can keep it open if there's a durable handle and have the client, when it reconnects, pass to the existing SMBD. And then when the file is still open, the file system can do better with detecting access from the outside. So that, what I want to say here is just one more sentence. We will definitely have to implement something in Samba and CDDB only to be able to offer persistent handles maybe on a different file system. And this needs to be taken into consideration.
That only deals with one of many failure scenarios that persistent handles have to cover. And if you say, if we save the descriptor, we stay alive. The problem is that when I nuke the server, you don't.
Exactly, yeah.
And persistent handles, in my mind, are about not just about nice situations, they're about not nice situations.
You're right, yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm.
So also in the case with ClusterFS, you need to maintain the SMB metadata, the open handle and things like that in a persistent way.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess you will need something from CTDB.
Well, somewhat, it turns out. So we don't need something. CTDB also we can detect the fact that a replay is occurring. And if we have no knowledge of the fact that a replay can occur on a given handle, we can then send it down to the file system and ask, is that replay valid at that point? And ask the file system about it. Okay. Part of why I'm rewinding here is to say, actually, one of the interesting things is your databases don't have to be persistent. They just need to be across machines in some cases. In Gloucester, we're actually not talking about persisting the databases at all, because we're splitting it across multiple machines and following our replication model. So basically, if you take out these two machines, yes, you will end up taking out the replication data and a whole bunch of other stuff associated with it. Or you end up taking out the servers associated with these two client translators. Okay, yes, you'll end up causing a bunch of havoc.
So you will pass down all the information from the SMB layer to
enough such that we can make the decision. More is the hope. Okay? I.e., basically the IDs and things like that should go down, and enough so that basically Samba can authenticate the connection. Samba can decide what to do at a high level. I.e., am I attempting a reconnect? Yes. Okay. Am I attempting to regather my handles? Yes. Okay. Now, let's go ahead down and ask the question about, is this a handle that I can reconnect up and start reconnecting it? So it's a mixture of the two, actually, is the answer.
Okay.